HFI's The Newsmakers. Today, one doctor's view of his own profession. Dr. Robert Mendelsohn does not believe in modern medicine. He is a medical heretic. Among other things, he says, physical examinations may be hazardous to your health. Hospitals are dangerous places for the sick. Most operations do little good, many do more harm than good, and many operations are unnecessary. Most drugs cause more problems than they cure, and the X-ray machine is the most dangerous tool at a doctor's disposal. Dr. Mendelsohn is not a fly-by-night operator, no pun intended. He is the former chairman of the Medical Licensing Committee for the state of Illinois. He's an associate professor of preventative medicine at the University of Illinois. He's won numerous awards for excellence in medicine and medical instruction. In Dr. Mendelsohn's book, Confessions of a Medical Heretic, he takes a look at some of the problems of modern medicine, and he tells you how to begin to make your own decisions regarding your medical treatment. Kim O'Hare asked him about his statement that the annual medical checkup might be hazardous to your health.
I'd like to point out that since the book came out, the American Medical Association now agrees with me, because they too have come out against the routine annual physical examination. The risks of the annual exam are well known to doctors, but they're not disclosed to the public. For example, the error rate in examinations, the biochemical tests, carrying an error rate of 18 to 25%. The misreading of x-rays, anywhere up to 33%, the misreading of electrocardiograms, the danger of contagion from the lowly stethoscope as it's passed from the chest of one patient to the chest of the other patient without being washed, especially if the doctor performs his examinations in a hospital, because in a hospital, which I refer to as the temple of the religion of modern medicine, because I don't think modern medicine is a science anymore, in the hospital, you can pick up germs that you can't get anywhere else in town. And when was the last time you last saw your doctor wash his stethoscope? So now I got a hunch that there's general agreement that the annual physical exam is passé. And it's sort of interesting because the annual exam came into being during the Depression years of the 1930s, when doctors could hardly make a living without doing the annual exams. And that, of course, paid the office rent for many of the doctors. And my argument is that if we can get rid of that annual physical examination, then we'll have a tremendous oversupply of doctors right now. Because not only does the annual physical examination pose the risks that I mentioned, but it also poses the risk of diagnosing a disease that you don't really have. I'll give you an example of that. If you take high blood pressure, in 1971, the diagnosis of high blood pressure was anything more than 165 over 95. In 1977, that diagnosis was changed to anything above 140 over 90, thus making 14 million extra people eligible for the antihypertensive drugs.
And just the idea that they have high blood pressure will make them have higher blood pressure.
Not only that, it may lead to treatment with the drugs, which have so many side effects. There are many dangers of going to the doctor when you're healthy, so much so that that section in my book is entitled, If This Is Preventive Medicine, I'll Take My Chances on Disease.
Okay, people hearing us now, they're not going to immediately say, that's it, I'm not going to keep having my physical. Presuming that people will still go and have physicals, what should they look for when they're sitting in their doctor's office?
Well, they should approach their doctor with suspicion. Because the instruments of modern medicine are so powerful and are so widely misused that the patient stands a better chance of being damaged than he does of being helped. Now, let me give you some of the details of the annual physical examination. I come out in the book against the routine annual chest x-ray because we know the dangers of irradiation, especially to pregnant women, where if a pregnant woman has had one x-ray of her chest or her abdomen or a full mouth set of dental x-rays, the risk of leukemia developing in her unborn child is increased by a factor of 50%. Now, the American Cancer Society, 2.5 months ago, I got a hunch they may have read the book, the American Cancer Society itself came out against the routine annual chest x-ray And they also came out against the routine annual pap smear, which has an error rate of 20 to 30% false negatives, where they miss the diagnosis of cancer, and a considerable error rate at the other end of false positives, where they diagnose you as having cancer when you really don't have cancer. So I'm very happy to see that the establishment organizations are now coming along the same route. And I would advise that if people do have to go for an annual physical, ask your doctor why he wants to take that x-ray. Remind your doctor of the study that I cite in Confessions of a Medical Heretic, where 197 out of 200 people in one study were cured of their disease simply by repeating the laboratory test. Ask your doctor why he thinks you need a pap smear, because there are three factors in cancer of the cervix that are important. The first is the pill, the second is the IUD, and the third is multiple sexual partners. So that if a woman has been married and faithful to one husband for her entire life and has not been exposed to the pill or the IUD, the danger of error in the pap smear outweighs the possibility of discovering something.
What does a patient do with an insistent doctor, though, who, through you mentioned the mystique of medicine, they keep secrets, they use their own vocabulary, and they more or less con you into going along with these tests?
Not only do they con you, but should you ask a doctor a question and challenge him, he is likely to say to you, "What medical school did you go to?" And, of course, the doctor frequently fires a patient. And dentists these days are firing patients because they won't submit to the full-mouth dental x-rays. In that case, I think it's a good idea to find yourself another doctor. And there are ways for people to find good doctors. I tell pregnant women that if you're looking for an obstetrician, ask him what his cesarean section rate is. And if it's an appropriate 5 or 6%, then he's the doctor for you. But if it's 10 or 15 or 20 or in some places 40%, then you better run for your life if you want to have a healthy baby and turn out to be healthy yourself in later life.
Talking about pregnancy and giving birth, there's an interesting section in the book about how delivery rooms are made and used like operation rooms.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, delivery rooms today have become just like operating rooms. That's because obstetricians in general have a peculiar view about pregnancy. They feel that pregnancy is a 9-month disease which only they can cure. And they ensure that the mother will not be able to deliver her own baby because they put her flat on her back with her feet up in stirrups, which means that she has to deliver a baby against the force of gravity, thus ensuring that there will be obstetrical intervention in the form of forceps, shaving of the perineum, which is very interesting because since 1936 it's been known in the medical literature that as soon as you shave a woman's perineum, the number of bacteria rise. So that's one of the best ways to promote infection. Yet obstetricians like to do it for aesthetic reasons, known only to obstetricians as far as I can tell. Furthermore, these days with the rising cesarean section rate, which I understand is hitting Canada as well, I hear that their cesarean section rate is rising almost as fast as the U.S. section rate is. Because obstetricians in general believe that God made a mistake when he didn't put a zipper into women's bellies. And so they rush for the knife to perform what I call slicing open the belly. They don't like that term, so they use religious terms when they want to sell a mother on a cesarean section. They say to her, wouldn't you rather have your baby from above rather than from below, because after all, from above denotes a certain kind of divine approach, and from below is pejorative. Who wants to have anything from below?
Mm-hmm.
So I watch closely what happens in delivery rooms, and they have now become exactly the same as operating rooms, but mothers are never told that the mortality rate from cesarean section is 26 times as high as it is from vaginal birth. And they are never told that the chance of a baby developing serious lung conditions is so high in cesarean sections that full-term babies born by sections develop a disease called respiratory distress syndrome that never occurs in full-term babies born vaginally.
Because during the natural vaginal process,
the muscles of the uterus squeeze the chest wall so that the extra fluid in the lungs is expelled through the mouth. But in a section, that opportunity does not exist. And so then the doctor tries to pass a tube down the infant's throat in order to perform in a very poor mechanical way what the mother's own organs are able to do naturally, which is why my conclusion is that in the United States, at least, the delivery today has become so dangerous in hospitals that the only place for a healthy mother to have a healthy baby is at home.
How many doctors will go along with that?
Well, in Chicago, we now have 8 doctors who deliver over 1,000 babies a year at home.
But 8 doctors in the city of Chicago? That's a drop in the bucket.
Oh, you're quite right. And what we're seeing today throughout the United States is delivery returning to where it should have been originally, and that is to the hands of midwives.
Okay, talking about pregnancy being treated as a sickness and giving birth being treated as an operation, you mention a fairly high percentage of operations that are unnecessary, not necessarily pregnancy, birth.
Well, I refer to them as the ritual mutilations of the Church of Modern Medicine. I take a look at hysterectomies and doctors' attitudes toward hysterectomies. I don't know whether you're aware of this, but 50% of doctors' wives have now had hysterectomies. Now, a famous surgeon said that the fact that 50% of doctors' wives have had hysterectomies proves what a wonderful operation it is, since doctors are the most intelligent people in the world. My response to that is that we now need a study to find out how doctors feel about their wives. But how many many doctors tell women that 40% of women who've had hysterectomies never again for the rest of their lives resume sexual intercourse? And that information comes from Professor Niles Newton of Northwestern University Medical School. How many doctors tell women that the incidence of emotional depression following hysterectomy is 8 times as high as it is following gallbladder surgery? How many doctors tell parents the dangers of circumcision? Routine circumcision performed in the worst possible place, the germy hospital, where you can pick up germs you can't get anywhere else in town, on the first day of life when the infant cannot control his physiologic processes, by the wrong personnel, sometimes by the doctor, but not unusually by the resident, and not infrequently by the medical student, who just hopes that the guy won't catch up with him 20 years later. How many people are told of the risks of hemorrhage and infection, and sometimes even gangrene? And yet the routine circumcision has no medical indication. How many people are told the risks of tonsillectomy, where the death rate is somewhere around 1 in 3,000 tonsillectomies? How many people are told the risks in vasectomy? In the United States, vasectomies are now surpassing tonsillectomies, and there's now over 1 million vasectomies a year, which have resulted in the production of a certain kind of antibody in vasectomized men, known as anti-sperm antibodies, which never occurs in normal men, which indicates some derangement of the immunologic system. But we've never even studied to find out what kind of diseases vasectomized men are prone to, because American medicine doesn't study that kind of thing. And besides, American medicine would much rather study women.
Do you think a lot of the studies done are done in retrospect? A new procedure is more or less discovered, it's done for several years, and then all of a sudden they start thinking of the vasectomy as an example.
I have to tell you, one of the rules of modern medicine, always use a new procedure as fast as you can before the side effects are known. And, of course, modern medicine today is doing that with some of its new toys, with ultrasound used to determine what's going on with the fetus inside the uterus, which the dangers of which have already been described in terms of damage to the chromosomal, to the DNA mechanism, amniocentesis, a procedure used to determine presumably what's wrong with the fetus, but which has a whole range of complications as well as a death rate. The dangers of interferon, the new cancer drug that's about to come out on the market. I wonder how many people know that Searle Laboratories put out a press release pointing out that there are 4 kinds of interferon, one of which, lymphoblastoid interferon, can cause cancer. So my advice to patients is that when your doctor comes to you and offers you interferon, you make sure that you ask him which kind he's giving you.
In Confessions of a Medical Heretic, Dr. Mendelsohn also takes a look at the hospital, a breeding place for bacteria, so-called preventative medicine, and he explores some of the myths of modern medicine. He admits that many of the points raised in his book are based on his experience in the United States. He admits that some of the problems are more acute in the U.S. than they are here. But he points out that Canada seems to be following the bad example being set by our neighbors to the south. Confessions of a Medical Heretic by Dr. Robert Mendelson. The Newsmakers on CHFI. Back tomorrow at 8:45. I'm Phil Ross.